Hello, and thank you for downloading Witness from the BBC World Service. I'm Louise Hidalgo, and I'm taking you back to February the 15th, 1998, when one of the great war correspondents of the 20th century was found dead at her flat in London. Her name was Martha Gellhorn.
All I was ever interested in was what happened to human beings. The decisions are made someplace else by people who generally are not exposed to the results of the decisions. And my interest was what happened to the people who did not control the decisions, but are the sufferers of history.
That interest took her all over the world. Vietnam, Israel, the Spanish Civil War, Dachau. Martha Gellhorn covered them all. And she was the first woman to report from the beaches of Normandy on the D-Day invasion of the Second World War.
We waded ashore in water to our waist, having agreed that we would assemble the wounded from this area and wait until the tide allowed the water ambulance to come back for us. Everyone was violently busy on that crowded, dangerous shore. The pebbles were the size of melons. We walked with the utmost care between white tape lines that marked the mine-cleared path. Suddenly our flak started going up at the far end of the beach, and it was beautiful, twinkling as it burst in the sky, and the tracer bullets were lovely, as they always are, and no one took pleasure from the beauty of the scene.
She really, I think, started that type of reporting about the tragedy of war, the widow, the child that was bombed for no reason at all, no fault of its own.
Sandy Matthews is Martha Gellhorn's stepson. She and his father, who was Martha's second husband, didn't stay friends after they divorced. But Sandy and Martha did. And when she died more than 30 years later, a few months short of her 90th birthday, it was Sandy who she'd made executor of her estate.
She wasn't really old in her head until she got cancer, stomach cancer and bowel cancer. And so we went out to lunch one day near her flat, and I noticed she wasn't eating. And she said, "I'm going to very soon one day take pills and end it."
And did you believe her?
Yes. Oh, yes, I did. Oh, yes, I did. She was a person of her word.
3 months after that conversation, Martha Gellhorn lay down in bed one Saturday evening, switched on an audiobook and took the pills.
She did call me the night before, and she had a little sob in her voice, and so I had an inkling that this was going to happen. But, you know, she had a good life. She had a long, good life. She drank her drinks, and she smoked her cigarettes, and she covered the world and was concerned with the world in a way my family wasn't. And so she taught me a great lesson.
There's a valley in Spain called Jarama. It's a place that we all know so well.
Martha Gellhorn was born in 1908, the third of four children, in St. Louis, Missouri, in the United States. Martha later said she'd been brought up to believe that a woman could do anything that a man could.
I had three brothers, and I was just brought up exactly the same way. And if it's assumed that men do whatever they want, I just assumed that I did whatever I wanted.
Her father was very much a person who believed in helping people. He was a doctor. Her mother was a campaigner for women's rights and quite strident. I was surprised because I knew her only as a gentle grandmother. And I think she and her husband gave Martha that platform to develop as a person who wanted to do something about the less fortunate in life.
Martha also wanted to see the world. In 1930, she arrived in Paris, aged 21, with a typewriter, $50, and the intention of becoming a foreign correspondent.
This is one of the great advantages of being young and generally idiotic, I think. I presented myself at the offices of the New York Times in Paris and announced to the head of the office, charming Englishman, that I was ready to be on his staff. This caused him to laugh himself off his chair.
And to send Martha on her way. For the next few years, she travelled between America and Europe, writing novels and short stories, and reporting on the Great Depression, then decimating communities across America, while in Europe, fascism was on the rise.
No fascist can dwell in our valley, nor breathe in our new freedom's air.
In 1936, Martha Gellhorn met Ernest Hemingway, whose book, A Farewell to Arms, had already established him as one of America's greatest writers. A year later, she joined him in Spain to cover the Spanish Civil War, and their relationship would become one of the most famous partnerships of the literary world.
her memories included kind of a love-hate relationship with Hemingway. She would often say, I'm not going to talk about Hemingway or anything like that. And after about three drinks, we'd end up talking about Hemingway. So it did happen.
They were married for 5 years, weren't they? Although they had been together before that. But she used to get infuriated, it seems, that that marriage, her relationship with Ernest Hemingway, was the thing that so many people remembered about her.
Yes, I think it was kind of like her albatross. She did want to be regarded as an independent writer, particularly as a writer of fiction, and that hasn't happened for her, unfortunately. And I think he was an A1 self-aggrandizer, marvelous at publicity and self-publicity, and loved the ballyhoo and the bright lights. But he was a good writer, very, very good writer. His dialogue is probably some of the best dialogue you'll read in the 20th century. But also self-aggrandizer, and I think that was hard to take, living in the shadow of that.
Towards the end, their marriage was increasingly turbulent. Hemingway could be fiercely competitive.
This is the BBC Home Service. D-Day has come. Early this morning, the Allies began the assault on the northwestern face of Hitler's European fortress.
When the largest seaborne invasion in history crossed the English Channel to France in June 1944, Hemingway had famously got the magazine that Martha usually wrote for to commission him instead. But it was Martha who got the scoop, sneaking onto a hospital ship and reaching the beaches of Normandy while Hemingway was still at sea.
Somebody on shore asked me what I was doing, and I said, I'm just going on this ship to interview the nurses, a woman's feature. You could always get by with that. It always sounded harmless and idiotic, and particularly Vietnam, it worked a treat. I'm just doing the woman's angle, I know he was interested anymore. And then I just locked myself in a toilet.
A year later, Martha Gellhorn was at Dachau concentration camp just after it had been liberated. This is some of what she wrote. Behind the barbed wire and the electric fence, the skeletons sat in the sun and searched themselves for lice. They have no age and no faces. They all look alike, and like nothing you will ever see if you are lucky.
I think at the time that she saw Dachau, it flicked a switch in her, and she never regarded humanity in quite the same light again. I think she even changed the idea of how a reporter functioned in life because of Dachau. She felt a reporter was a witness, somebody who actually told what was going on, and that was it.
Objectivity, she said, was rubbish.
If you are seeing something happening, the idea that you're so brain dead and stony hearted that you have no reaction to it strikes me as absolute nonsense.
Her friend James Fox described her as a radical liberal until the day she died.
Yes, yes. She was always running after causes, putting her nose into trouble and finding out what's going on. I think in her 80s she went out to Brazil to see about these poor children who were being taken off the street and used as slaves and so forth. She was very interested in anybody who was downtrodden and wanted to help, and she spent her life doing that.
In her last years, a circle of close friends, many of them journalists, would bring her stories of their adventures, and they'd talk late into the night at her flat in London, whiskey in hand. Her last report for the BBC on the old mining communities of South Wales was broadcast 6 months before she died.
History should not be forgotten, ever. Because always the past has some relation, both on the present and the future.
Her stepson, Sandy Matthews, was speaking to me, Louise Hidalgo, for Witness. And for details of our complete range of downloads and our terms of use, go to bbcworldservice.com/podcasts.